There's a war on history. There's a war on America as founded. Of course, we could back up and even ask the question, does history matter? And we could also ask this question, what role, if any, did the Bible play in the founding of America? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is David Barton, the David Barton. He's the founder of Wall Builders, the author of Original Intent and some other important books. And David, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I look at you as basically a walking encyclopedia on America's Christian roots, and so it's an honor every time I talk with you.
Thank you, brother. It's good to be with you, and appreciate all you do to inform and educate and motivate others. Thank you.
Sure. Now, what are your thoughts about, just as a general topic here, that there is, especially in our time, especially in the last year or so, we've seen a war on America as founded? Your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a great George Orwell quote that I'll use here, and he said, who controls the past controls the future, and who controls the present controls the past. Right now, the ones who teach history right now are controlling the past, and the way you present the past determines what you will become in the future. So the battle we're having in America right now, a culture battle, if you will, is all about our history. It's interesting that what we're saying about critical race theory and 1619 Project, et cetera, would never have been accepted 30 years ago because we knew too much of our own history. We do not know that history today, and so we fall into all sorts of traps, and therefore we think America is fundamentally flawed, that we have systemic racism or whatever it is. That's not what history shows. Yes, there have been flaws. There have been plenty of flaws. Lots of bad things happen. Lots of ugly things happen, but many more good things happen than bad or ugly, and we just don't hear about the good things today. Even with critical race theory, we know most folks cannot name any black heroes outside of the 20th century. You can take Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks, and that's great. They're great heroes. Nobody knows who Wentworth Chesrell is or Peter Salem or Billy Flora or Wentworth Chesrell or Matthias de Souza or all these other great black names I could give you. We used to know them. We don't know them. And that's why we're open for moving in a different direction, which we should never be doing.
Well, you know, you mentioned the 1619 Project. One of the things that they've said, and it's my understanding that they've backpedaled on this particular point since it's such an egregious historical error, but they've actually said that the reason that our revolution was even fought was because the founders wanted to defend slavery. And that's outrageous as a statement, but that does not square at all with the historical facts. How about you enlighten us on this?
Yeah, they actually go back further than that, and they say that the American colonies were founded to protect and perpetuate slavery, and the American Revolution was fought for the same reason. And if you want to say Jamestown had slavery, you can say that, but you can't say they were founded to perpetuate and protect slavery. And you sure can't say that with the northern colonies. When you get to the Pilgrims and the Puritans and the New Haven colony, when you get to the Connecticut colony, the Rhode Island colony, the New Hampshire colony, you can't say that about any of them. So you can't say it about any of the 13 colonies, even though some of them did have slavery. None of them were founded to protect and perpetuate slavery, and that is the mantra of the 1619 Project. And by the way, 1619 is even dead wrong for the year. They say that's when slavery was first introduced into America. No, time out. The Spanish brought slaves to the Carolinas in 1526. They brought slaves into Florida in about 1555 or 56. I mean, there was lots of slavery before 1619, and even the slaves that were brought to Virginia in 1619 did not remain slaves. Virginia did not have slavery until 1653 in a court decision where that a black man sued to own another black man. That's the first occasion of slavery in Virginia. So the year 1619 is not even accurate in any of their assertions.
Wow, that's amazing. And I understand as far as the during the time of the American Revolution, there were a lot of black people that actually got involved helping to defend America.
I would say it's more than helping to defend. I would say they were integral and vital. And by the way, let me back up to say that today we've never heard of people like Matthias de Souza, who was elected to office in 1641 in Maryland by a white community, black guy elected to office. We've probably not heard of Wentworth Cheswell, who was a black man elected by a white community of New Hampshire in 1768 and held political office in a white community for 49 years, held eight different political positions. Wow. He made a super famous ride, a Paul Revere kind of ride during the American Revolution. Great patriot, great historian. We probably never heard of Thomas Hercules, elected office in a white community in 1793 in Pennsylvania, a black man. And the papers touted the fact that, see, we don't care what color someone is. We care whether they're competent. And Thomas Hercules is the most competent man, and we elected him. And so you get none of the elected officials. It would seem that we didn't have elected officials until the 1960s. Some Reconstruction occasionally gets mentioned, but even those guys, you know, who in the world is people like Robert Smalls or Richard Kane or John Roy Lynch or so many of the others we could name, that the first 23 black congressmen most people never heard of, and they don't know when they were elected. So going back into that era, when you look at the American War for Independence, it's striking that the entire revolution or War for Independence was a volunteer army. That's what we had in America, volunteer army. Your term of enlistment was 6 months. The average white man served one term of enlistment. The average black man reenlisted eight additional times. On average, black soldiers served nine times longer in the American War for Independence than white soldiers did, and every battle was integrated, and not only was every battle integrated, not only do you have black participants in every battle, but in virtually every battle, you have black heroes, not participants, but heroes that are the key names in the battle, and those are names we don't know today. That changed in 1902. Woodrow Wilson wrote the history of the American people and took out every single black person from American history, including Frederick Douglass. Progressives love Wilson. They've used his work since then. That's why we don't know black history today. Thank you, Woodrow Wilson, for your progressive ideas that eliminated that part of history that you didn't like as a racist.
Wow. As far as the Bible is concerned, what role did the Bible play? And by the way, I imagine a lot of those blacks that you mentioned were Bible readers, just like a lot of the whites, of course, back then were Bible readers.
Well, just mentioning that, let me point out that when you look at the Great Awakenings, the great religious revivals, you have massive crowds that go to hear George Whitefield and go to hear John and Charles Wesley and go to hear people like Francis Asbury. And yet folks like Francis Asbury, who drew tens of thousands in his crowds, he said, Harry Hoosier has larger crowds than I do. Now, we don't know Harry Hoosier because he's a black evangelist. And yet, if you can think of the word Hoosier, you might identify it with the Hoosier State. And yet, I'll bet you that most folks who live in Indiana today have no clue that they were named after a black evangelist who had so much impact, with his converts especially being the ones that moved into Indiana. And they were so different from the other kind of wild guys there, the mountain men and frontiers guys, that the frontier guys would look at these guys and say, what's with these guys? They're so different. They don't cuss and they don't drink and they're really different. And they say, oh, yeah, that's a bunch of those Hoosiers. Well, yeah, that's the folks that really built Indiana. So we don't know about that. We don't know about Lemuel Haynes, who's the first black man in American history to receive a degree of higher education. He was a pastor. He is the first black man to have a sermon published. This guy, amazingly, pastored churches all over New York and Massachusetts, Vermont, and they were white churches. He's a black pastor of white church. He was in the American Revolution, a Minuteman under George Washington, in his churches. He preached a sermon on George Washington's birthday. When that birthday occurred, he would herald his commander-in-chief with whom he had served. We've never heard of him. I mean, there's so many other black pastors I can go through that we don't talk about today, John Morant and so many others. So you're right, we don't know those guys, but taking the religious element, it's striking that America, this last September 17th, we celebrated our 234th birthday under the Constitution. And yet the average length of a Constitution in the history of the world, according to Cornell Law School research, is 17 years. So we're at 234. Everybody else is averaging 17. And when political science professors at the University of Houston and LSU wanted to see where the founders got these ideas that made it so different, they identified that the single most cited source in the founding era was the Bible, cited four times more often than Baron Charles Montesquieu, four times more often than William Blackstone, and 12 times more often than John Locke, which were the second, third, and fourth place competitors. So the Bible, far and away, is the number one cited source in the founding era when we are building our government and building our documents and building our nation.
Yeah, and the ideas of Montesquieu and Blackstone and Locke, whom you just mentioned, were Christian ideas. For example, Sir William Blackstone said that basically God has revealed himself in nature through natural law, but then those areas where we don't know more, he's revealed himself through the Holy Scriptures, and that all human laws should not contradict the laws that God has, you know, put on our heart and the laws of Scripture. So it's a very interesting, I mean, in other words, the Bible influenced Blackstone, the Bible influenced Montesquieu, and the Bible influenced Locke as well. So I think that's a, you know, important point. So the Bible.
When you look at the political philosophers that were cited by the founders, as well as the Bible itself, it turns out that 94% of the sources cited by the founders were Bible-based sources. Wow. You mentioned Blackstone, and he has that four-volume set that came out in 1766 through 1769, and it is in Volume 1, Section 2, where he has that long exposition that you just talked about, Jerry, where that God revealed himself in two ways. He revealed himself, one, through nature, but when Adam sinned and fell, he says, okay, I need to write these laws down because you don't see them clearly anymore, and that's the Scriptures. And as Blackstone said, and this is where we get the phrase, the laws of nature and of nature's God in the Declaration. That's the dual revelation of God as he revealed himself through his creation. We know that from Romans 1:20 and also through the Scriptures. So there's that. But even you take someone like John Locke, and John Locke was a theologian from England. John Locke, interestingly enough, Richard Henry Lee, who's a signer of the Declaration, who made the motion that we should separate from Great Britain, become an independent nation. Richard Henry Lee said that the founding fathers, and he was one of them, that they copied the Declaration from the two treatises of government by John Locke. Now, that is an interesting book because it's less than 400 pages long, but in those 400 pages, John Locke references the Bible over 1,500 times in that short little book. And that's a great indication of the type of content that is in the sources relied on by the founding fathers, whether it's Blackstone or Montesquieu or Locke or whatever. You'll find that those writers openly invoke the Scriptures for their beliefs and their positions.
Okay, David, we have about 3 minutes left to wrap up this conversation. How do we turn things around? Here we have millions and millions of young Americans who, they don't know this history, and therefore, like you said earlier, they've been sold a bill of goods and they bought it.
Yeah, the answer to that, Jerry, is just going to take individuals. We are so fixated now on national issues because we listen to national news, and we know all about what Congress is doing or what the president is doing or what the Supreme Court is doing. And while we talk about young people not knowing history, the adults don't know it much better than young people do. I mean, literally, the adults have a better tone. They can't defend their positions, but they think it wasn't really anti-religious back then, but they can't really prove why. So one of the things we have to do is individually, we have to take the responsibility on ourselves to go back and learn this. We see actually even in polling numbers right now that 48% of elected officials cannot name the three branches of government. Now, when you've got people in office who don't even know what the branches of government are, you sure can't have separation of powers or checks and balances or anything else. And so we're just kind of resting on our laurels and taking the education we had and saying, well, I know about America because I had an American history course. No, no, no. What you got in that course was not much about America that was accurate. And that's why we have to individually go back and look at this. That's literally why we did the book, The American Story, our most recent book, which is starting at Columbus and going all the way through Abraham Lincoln and the end of slavery. Most people cannot tell you the details of that story, which is why we came up with that book.
Well, I remember one of the things you gave me one time years ago when I first met you, you gave me a little reprint that you had done of the New England Primer. And what a resource that was. We have about 1 minute left.
Yeah, that New England Primer is really kind of a fun book because it was considered a starting book in America from 1690 when it was first printed until the 1920s and 30s. You'll find it still being used in our schools. And it was a text from which we learned to read. And anybody that wants to take and read it today, I'll just about assure you that most adults who have a PhD probably cannot answer most of the questions in that little first grade book. So it's super cool. It is based on the Bible. It teaches how to read, but it also teaches content. It has a catechism in the back of 168 questions that these first grade kind of kids were supposed to answer. And most Americans don't have a clue what first graders used to know in America for over 200 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. That catechism, by the way, was the Westminster Confession of Faith shorter catechism.
That's right.
Which was written for children. And you read it. I mean, we just used a portion of it in church the other day, and it reads well for adults, believe me. So anyway, David, thanks so much. Thanks for being with us. Wallbuilders.com. I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for all you guys do. Bless you, brother.